What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Trance here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Drance, what's up?
Another Canucks win?
Yeah.
They're in Saturday Night Fever mode, staying alive.
That's right.
They needed it. I mean, no question. And look, I thought the Thatcher Demko performance was exceptional, obviously. Held them in it. It gave them time to find their game.
Mm-hmm.
And then they played really well in the second half. I like watching this team right now, to be totally honest with you. There's like a level of pluck, you know, that's actually quite endearing. And so to be able to come out with 2 points in a game in which Quinn Hughes didn't have it the way he usually has, both of late and all season, I mean, that's huge, right? If you'd told me that the Canucks would get out attempted 2-1 and outshot by a wide margin with Quinn Hughes on the ice against the Islanders, I would have said, oh boy,
yeah,
they're in trouble. So to pull out not just a win, but a clear victory over the Islanders in those circumstances, man, that matters a ton and sort of keeps the pressure on with a loaded out-of-town scoreboard tonight.
Yeah, bare minimum, it makes the scoreboard watching for Canucks fans a whole lot more interesting tonight. We will get into that throughout the course of the show. We do have one guest today, Kevin Kurz, covering the Philadelphia Flyers for The Athletic. Of course, as I'm sure you've heard by now, the Flyers move on from head coach John Tortorella after his very interesting comments following their loss in Toronto earlier this week. Now, there's an obvious potential connection between this Philly job opening up and, of course, the Canucks and Rick Tocchet. So we'll touch on that a little bit with Kevin Kurz. Don't want to make too much of it here. I mean, Rick Tocchet's still the coach of the Vancouver Canucks, obviously, but we'll touch on that with Kurz and just the end of the Tortorella era in general in Philly.
Yeah, I got some updates on this. We'll get into it in the whiteboard.
We will get into it. And speaking of that, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, March 27th. We'll start with the headlines. Canucks win again, 5-2 against the Islanders in New York. And as you said, Drancer, Thatcher Demko, really the story of that game, although there are a lot of interesting things to get into from that win. But Thatcher Demko was spectacular, especially early, kept the Canucks in the game early, including a couple of fantastic saves. Former Canuck Bo Horvat, and then that allowed the Canucks to stick around. They did take the lead. They fell behind. But the most impressive part of the game beyond Demko for me from a team-wide perspective for the Canucks was what they did in the third period with the lead. And it helps a lot. You get that early goal from Teddy Bluger, and the Islanders replaced Sorokin, who did not have a strong night. That helps.
He's been overused, and man, did it show.
But the amount of play in the third period, you're on the road, you're playing against a desperate team, you're up 2 goals, it's the third period, and the Canucks were able to play the majority of that period in the Islanders' end of the rink. And that is something that has been a massive struggle in situations like that to still control play, to not be under siege constantly. It's a struggle for a lot of teams. Like, score effects exist for a reason. It's hard to keep controlling play in situations like that. The fact that the Canucks, again, played most of the time in the Islanders' end of the rink in that third period, from a team perspective, forget about Thatcher Demko just for a second, that's what stood out the most for me from that game and that win against the Islanders.
Yeah, I mean, the Canucks, I think that's a fair... There was a lot that stood out to me, I think, and the third period was strong. I liked the aggressiveness that the Canucks showed. I think they gave up a few chances, though, right? Like, there were the Holmstrom chance in tight. Engvall hit the post. There was one other really big save, Anders Lee, off that sort of rebound chance. So it wasn't spotless.
But it was like maybe like a 50-50 period, or maybe like a 55-45 period for the Canucks. But so
as opposed
off,
to the 80%,
well, so often
expect.
That situation, you're up two, you're trying to hang on, it's completely tilted the other way.
They definitely didn't park the bus, but they also didn't shut the door. I think it's fair to say, like, Demko had to be sharp in the third period. And I think you'd take more shot volume for fewer high-quality scoring chances. Like, 3-5 alarm chances in a period up two. That's not ideal. Mm-hmm. So, I guess I just disagree with you, Jimmy.
Yeah, fair enough.
I didn't think the third period was great.
I just thought
it was
so unlike what we've seen from them typically this year.
I liked the second. I thought the second was, like, the final 10 minutes of the second period was where that game was won. I mean, obviously, both on the scoreboard and I thought in terms of Vancouver really finding their game, you know, easily that game could have been what? 2-0, 3-1?
Yeah.
Maybe 3-0 after the first period. So Demko definitely gave them a chance to find their game. They did. And then, yeah, I liked that they didn't park the bus, but I did think the, you know, defensive gaps were apparent in the third period. Some for me, to be totally honest with you, because we've slogged through this season, right? And we don't know how this story ends. The Canucks, you know, sort of upped their odds from 1-5 to 1-3 with that win last night. We'll see what the out-of-town scoreboard looks like tonight and sort of exactly know what sort of stakes the club will be staring down the barrel of at Nationwide Arena in Columbus on Friday after tonight. So we'll have time to unpack that tomorrow. But I've watched a lot of Canucks games and we've done a lot of shows recapping Canucks games where the sneering joylessness that surrounded this team, the inconsistency of effort, the muted goal celebrations, the lack of sacrifice up and down the lineup, you know, with like a few exceptions, Hughes, Garland, but you know exactly who the few exceptions are.
Yeah.
Right. Was like one of the most noticeable parts of most of this Canucks season. And last night I thought a really big moment for me, or something I read a lot into was Pugh Suter with a clear lane at the empty net to seal the game. Like easy shot. And remember, Pugh Suter is a pending UFA with 21 goals, already set a career high. He's playing top line minutes. He's got what, 10 games remaining now?
Yep.
He could get to 25, especially if he had an empty netter to add to his total last night. He could be sitting at 22 goals, three goals in the last
10 games.
How much is that worth to Pugh Suter in real dollars? Like maybe $1 million, maybe $2 million. Honestly, right? That milestone would matter for this dude. And what does he do? He passes the puck off. Passes the puck off to Kiefer Sherwood. Sherwood secures the three-point night. Sherwood has a chance to eclipse the 20-goal milestone for the first time in his career, right? I mean, he's already scored more goals this season than he ever had in all of his pro career at the NHL level prior. But getting to 20 goals, like, that matters. That's a huge... And the reaction of the team to that moment of sacrifice was just through the roof. Like, at the very least, I think, and we talked about this a little bit on the crossover, like, what do you want to see from the Canucks down the stretch? And that moment, that goal, got me sort of thinking that more than anything, what I'd love to see from the Canucks over the balance of the season, more than making the playoffs results independent, more than Tom Volander, more than Thatcher Demko staying healthy, although, man, that's a pretty close second.
Yep.
I would love to see this team truly leave that sense of joylessness, that sense of the big ineffable, never completely explained noise that surrounded this group all season in the past. Like I would like to see more of what we saw last night, more of what we saw against the Devils. Honestly, what we even saw against the Rangers, to be totally honest with you, which was a group that appeared to be having some fun and competing hard for one another. I think that's really crucial. And you know, as I sort of look at this week, and I think a lot of Canucks fans are quite rightly, because this is an exciting time of year, taking the like, they're back in it. Past the Flames, leapfrogged. Rob Williams used the word leapfrogged. The Flames could lose in regulation tonight and still be tied by the Canucks in point percentage, by the way, Rob. Leapfrogged. So as much as people want to get caught up in that, for me, it was just that sense of fun, that sense of a hardworking, plucky team that competed hard for one another. The return of that, the sense that maybe this team has made it through the tunnel that has shrouded so much of the season. That to me was my big takeaway from the game.
Well, I think if you stretch it back, not just these two wins against the Islanders and the Devils, but yeah, throw in the Rangers loss in there as well. Are those the three most high-effort games that the Canucks have strung together consecutively this season, where there's just been the three games that you can look at as a whole, as a unit, and say that's been their best stretch of consistent effort of the season. I think there's a pretty good chance. Certainly these last two games where you're undermanned going into them, you don't have Elias Pettersson, you don't have Nils Höglander, and you still get wins and still get the effort from the team from up and down the lineup. I'm hard-pressed to think of other similar examples of that this year for the Canucks. And effort was such a hallmark and a trademark of this team under Rick Tocchet last year, and a reason why they were able to have so much success. And it was something that was so frequently lacking on a consistent basis earlier in the season. So, you know, have they left it a little late? Yeah, they sure have. And maybe they left it too late to rediscover that consistent effort. But at least they're doing it now. At least they're doing it now. And maybe if you are able to harness that and finish off the regular season, meeting that level of compete, meeting that level of effort night in, night out here for the final 10 games, as you say, you hope that it can erase some of the bad blood and the bad vibes from earlier this year. And even if it doesn't result in a playoff berth, change how we look at this team, change how we look at this group going into the offseason. Because it has been, you know, I think you just put it, it's fun to watch again. It's a fun team to root for. It's a fun team to watch in a way that it simply wasn't for large stretches of this season. And that matters. We'll get more into the game as we continue throughout the show here. Actually, one thing I do want to touch on, you know, a lot of talk about the depth scoring. And I do want to note Atu Ratu scoring against his former team. And obviously you could tell what that meant to him. Big moment, big goal for him against the team that drafted him and he broke into the NHL with. And I just thought another overall very impressive effort from Atu Ratu. You can see a lot of the things that he does well, how strong he is on the puck. Him and Linus Karlsson, by the way, like, those guys are rock solid along the wall with the puck.
They don't
get easily pushed off the puck.
And while Linus Karlsson is not especially fast, I mean, neither is Atu Ratu, but I do like the way that he connects in the neutral zone. I think he's pretty sharp in terms of covering for his speed and playing fast, even if he himself is slow. And then Atu Ratu obviously getting in on the forecheck there on the Canucks' first goal, like, that's a really good sign. He's looking like an NHL player, just like flat out an NHL player. What sort of ceiling? I don't know. But man, like, honestly, especially in the first half of the game when the Canucks weren't going, I thought he was. And I thought there was an accumulation of clever touches, smart plays, good positional fundamentals that he was showing off throughout that game. So even beyond the deflection goal and the assist that he picked up on that forechecking goal, or that forechecking sequence that Kiefer Sherwood ultimately put home, I just thought it was a really sharp contest for him from a two-way perspective as well, even though he didn't have the same level of dominance in the faceoff circle that he's had in some of the other games that he's played. So yeah, I mean, he's a player, man. Like,
yeah.
I think they've got an NHL player.
And
man,
I think especially you consider all of the questions around the center position for this team going into next year, a guy who's sticking, helping you right now and wins faceoffs, that's a pretty interesting player for them. I know you've said maybe he works better on the wings, but just, again, considering what the center depth chart looks like and his ability to win draws, that's an interesting player going into next year's training.
Nothing wrong with a surplus center on the wings, especially one who has size, can get in on the forecheck, right? Can win battles on the wall, right? Like, that's the sequence of him on that forecheck is why I think he might work better on the wing, right?
Yeah.
Because he can get in F1. I think he wins. He's just a really good pound-for-pound battle winner, man, in addition to having, you know, pretty good hands in traffic. So, yeah, no, I'm really, really impressed with what we saw out of Atu Ratu, really impressed by the speed we saw out of DPD,
yes.
Elias Pettersson.
Yes.
That was incredible.
I want to talk more about the blue line later in the show, but that was awesome.
Yeah, anyway, we can move on.
Other headline I wanted to mention, Tom Volander playing an elimination game with Boston University in the NCAA tournament right now against Ohio State. And in fact, recently, Boston University has tied it at one about midway through the second period. Cole Iserman scored the tying goal for Boston. Now, it was a tough start to the game for Boston University. They were outshot 15-2 by Ohio State in the first period, but only down one. And shots are 7-7 in the second. So they've managed to stabilize from a possession standpoint, or at least a shot standpoint, in this second period. And it's a 1-1 game. Again, this is single elimination. So if Boston University loses, Tom Belander's college season is over, and that transitions us here to the broadsheet. And there's been a couple of, I'll say, competing reports from people in the market here on the status of negotiations with Tom Belander, where his next destination is likely to be after his college season ends up. Cam Robinson from Elite Prospects saying that negotiations are heating up between the Canucks and Belander, and the most likely option is Belander signs and sees NHL action to burn a year of his ELC this year. Rick Dhaliwal saying, not so fast. They're not going to negotiate until after his college season is done, and the AHL is still very much a possibility. So we'll see. I mean, I would expect, like, if his season does end today, I would expect a resolution relatively quickly, not like today or anything, but relatively quickly on Tom Belander's future and what it looks like. So this should get resolved, but something to keep an eye on, and a couple of different reports from Rick Dhaliwal and Cam Robinson on where things stand and what could be coming here for Belander and the Canucks.
Yeah, so lots of reporting out there, right? Rick Dhaliwal noting that negotiations haven't started. Cam Robinson suggesting that at least some conversations have taken place and that the most likely outcome is that Tom Belander joins the NHL roster. What I'm hearing is closer to what Dhaliwal is. Not only that negotiations won't really get going until after Belander's team, his BU team, is eliminated, whether that's today or at some point in the future, but also I'm hearing the opposite of Cam in terms of where this is most likely to go. Look, there's two main issues that, well, three main issues that teams and players, especially these drafted players who played NCAA hockey, sort of work through as leverage points in these types of negotiations. Number one is, do you come out or not? Okay, and that obviously impacts things. Belander still would have two more years before he could even consider doing the Justin Schultz year, so that's not likely to be a big factor here. He wants to turn pro. Team wants him to turn pro. I'd expect that to happen in short order following the Terriers' elimination, or I guess they could win the national championship. We'll see.
Yep.
Number two is bonuses, and this is the interesting one for me because the Canucks have been pretty, what's the opposite of spendthrift, Jamie? They've been
generous.
No, sorry. Spendthrift.
Spendthrift means you don't spend.
Okay. They've been spendthrift. All in right, terms of,
here we go. We figured it out. You thought spendthrift meant you spent a lot. Thrift is in the
right. My bad.
It does, apparently, according to Google.
What? Spendthrift means person, you spend a lot.
A person who spends money in an extravagant, irresponsible
Thank you.
Way.
I knew it.
That is stunning to me.
So you can't come up with the opposite stunning. Of spendthrift.
Cheap.
Cheap.
Yeah.
Well, but I don't want to call the Canucks cheap. That's not what I mean.
That's what you're doing.
No.
They've been cautious.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's thrifty. Not that they're not...
Thrifty.
No.
Google suggests the exact opposite would be skinflint.
Skinflint. Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
I like that.
That sounds way worse than
word.
Cheap.
Why? Yeah.
A person who spends as little money as possible.
Yeah. They've been careful now. They've been careful about committing significant bonuses on ELCs. That's not to say that they're like playing hardball even. I think one part of it is when a player plays on your roster and hits those bonuses, especially if you're in LTI, right? Then that money gets tolled onto next season's cap as an overage, right? So in the past anyway, like Lekkerimäki, go if you're a nerd about this, go look at cap wages Lekkerimäki and cap wages Sebastian Kosa, both 14th overall picks in back-to-back years. And huge difference in terms of Schedule A, Schedule B bonuses on the contract. Canucks have tended to be cautious about how much they commit in terms of that. And then the final one is, do you start in the NHL? Because mm-hmm. if you start in the AHL, you can't play in the Calder Cup playoffs. Or do you start in the American League? Because if you play in the American League, you can't come up and play down the stretch. You can't play NHL games this season. And, of course, if you start in the NHL, you burn a year off your ELC. If you start in the AHL, your contract doesn't begin until next year. You actually sign a tryout
sign an
contract.
ATO, right? Yeah, an amateur
an ATO
tryout.
Yeah. In order to play AHL hockey. Bonuses, interesting part of this. I think the Canucks are going to push for and seem confident about landing the player to begin in the American League. That's the club's preference at this juncture. I think there's an obvious understanding that while Belander probably could come in into the lineup and play usefully on the third pair, you know, how many minutes do you get while this team's in the playoff chase right now? Like, it's going to be hard to get you to 100 yeah. NHL minutes.
Well,
over
especially
the
because
of the season.
How likely is he to get in if they're still alive in the playoff race?
Well,
that's a tough.
I mean, he could join the Mancini DPD rotation.
It's
probably
just, he could, but that's a tough ask for, you know, if you're playing a game where, hey, if we win, we're tied with the Blues all of a sudden, yeah, and you're putting him in, that's tough. And you might not be out of those high stakes games. Well, you might not be out at all because you might make the playoffs, but you know, if you might not be eliminated to like the last game of the season.
If you get into four or five games and play 60 NHL minutes, right? 60 to 75 NHL minutes, that's like a good outcome. That means Volander's coming in impressed, right? Whereas you go down to the American League, you can hit 60 to 75 minutes in three games.
Yeah. So is it more about the development opportunity for him, the desire to get him in the AHL this year, or is it more about preserving the extra year of the ELC?
Yeah, I think it's more about what's right, what's the best.
What is going to help him be a better hockey player?
What is the best route for us to take to make sure that Volander is a difference maker in our lineup game one next year?
Okay.
That's the priority.
That's interesting, and that makes a lot of sense because to me, doing it to preserve the extra year of his ELC would be like, I don't think there's that much benefit to the team to do that.
Especially,
in fact, if anything, you get it, you burn a year of the ELC this year, he's eligible for an extension next offseason. And he's right. Like, hey, you want to do 7 or 8 years here? Let's do it.
Well, you know me, that I love that. From a long-term planning perspective, I actually think that's the best outcome for the team or the best bet that the team could make. But this team is going to be all in on next season. And yeah, Tom Volander is a big part of that plan. Go down to the American League, play huge minutes, compete in the Calder Cup playoffs, right? What they want is to put him through like an accelerated DPD plan where he got a long look at training camp but went down to the American League. And then when he came back up 20 games ago,
you're never going to the AHL again.
Like, holy cow, man.
Yeah.
Well, way to go, buddy.
Although clearly he should have been up so much sooner. They really blew it with DPD. That's the moral of the lesson here.
I think that's incorrect.
Yeah, I'm joking.
I don't think he would have been that guy.
I'm joking.
So anyway, so it'll be interesting to see exactly where the fault lines are here, right? Like, does one side give up on bonuses to get either the American League or the NHL side, right? Like, that's probably, those are the give and takes that we'll track here across the next, you know, 72 hours to a week, depending on how the BU Terriers track here.
Yeah, and just double checking. Oh, Ohio State has gone up 2-1. So they have retaken the lead in the second period with about 5 minutes left against Boston. We'll update you on that when the score is final or if anything else changes in Tom Volander's game with BU against Ohio State in the NCAA tournament. To whip through the rest of the whiteboard here, because we're running a little long, should just mention, obviously, in the broadsheet that with Torts fired in Philly, a lot of speculation out there about what it means for Rick Tocchet's future. We'll park that conversation. We'll park that for another segment, but just wanted to throw it a mention. Lineup notes, team practices in Columbus, or they did practice already. They've done practice in Columbus today. I guess the big lineup decision is, do you give Thatcher Demko a third straight game? Seems pretty likely to me, based on how he played against the Islanders, that he's going to be there in another big, big game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. But we'll wait and see if we hear anything official on that. Probably won't until tomorrow. Playoff standings update per Dom's model. Canucks playoff odds at 33% after that win. They are 3 points back of the Blues with a game in hand. They're 1 point up on the Flames, but the Flames have 2 games in hand, and they are 5 points back of the Wild. They've both played 72 games, so no games in hand either way there. Tonight on the Out-of-Town scoreboard, the Blues somehow play the Predators again, this time on the road. The Flames host the Stars. Stars are on the second half of a back-to-back, of course, after beating Edmonton last night. And Minnesota hosts Washington. So that's your scoreboard watching schedule for tonight.
Gambling odds. The Utah Hockey Club is a heavy road underdog in Tampa Bay, plus 170. They also play the Florida Panthers tomorrow. Tough for the Utah Hockey Club. Probably need all 4 points to even remain in the conversation. The St. Louis Blues on the road in Nashville, guess what? Heavily favored, minus 140 to defeat the Predators again. And then the Dallas Stars favored in Calgary, minus 135. So the Flames, home underdogs against a team that played last night.
Yes.
Now, they won in lopsided fashion, so they were able to manage their minutes a bit, but that seems a little high to me.
Yeah.
Look, Dallas deserves our respect, obviously, but I that seems a little high to me.
There's a big stakes differential in that one, too.
If
does not mean a lot to Dallas, means a lot to Calgary.
If I was a hockey better, that would be, I'd be all over Flames money line, although I also would be licking my wounds from the Canucks
from the
Islanders
under.
Over. Let's quickly do playoff odds here. Sorry, just in terms of to make the playoffs, the Vancouver Canucks plus 240 as a result of their win last night. So again, that's the dynamic. The Canucks kind of go between 20% to 30% when they keep pace, right? And then the market goes back to where it was before in the event that St. Louis and Calgary both win tonight.
Yeah. All right. That is the whiteboard for today. We'll take a break. Lots more to get into, some of the DPD stuff and just the defense corps as a whole, the Rick Tocchet, Philly stuff, a lot to get into here on the other side on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.